It's Good Shows Leafs Hour, brought to you by Drive Auto Group, fueled by customer expectations. The crew has so little faith in me with my reads that they had to remind me. They didn't have to, actually. I would have nailed this. This is the one read I would have gotten. But they actually buzzed in like, hey, this is presented by Drive Auto Group. I've been doing this for 3 years, all right? I know it's Drive Auto Group.
By the way, what a great job the Drive Auto Group does.
What a great job.
It's fantastic.
I don't know what they do.
I do.
What do they do, sell cars?
I drive autos.
They drive autos in a group, yeah.
But they do, seriously. I have heard good things.
Yeah, so have I. Five-star review. Did they leave a five-star review? Actually, someone sent me a picture once of their dealership, and they had an ad on the wall for us. So, yeah. So I was
pretty stoked. Wearing glasses in the ad?
No. There was no picture of us.
So the ad didn't look intelligent?
No, it just had a logo for the show. I was like, good call.
Yeah. Probably the good, smart advertising.
Good call.
That way when they swap you out for someone
else. This is why Drive
else,
Auto Group is successful.
Yeah.
Drive Auto Group is successful because they know how to market things. So it's Justin Bourne. Normally on a Monday. This week we had Ian on a Tuesday. And how fortuitous it turned out to be. Old Nostrabuncus just predicting that today would be the day that things are hot in Leafland and that conversations need to be had. And I was texting with you yesterday, and our friendship has changed because we're colleagues now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we used to have talks about the Leafs privately, and now there's this filter of save it for the show.
Yeah.
Like, don't tell me all your thoughts. And it's weird. I miss my friend.
Well, before, as your friend, there's always the sense that JD has a job to do, and he's a business professional. And part of it is how much of him wants to have this conversation for real and how much of him wants to pry information and opinion out of me to which he can use on the show the next
day. Yeah. There's definitely that. Sometimes you give me something great, which I just really want to steal. There's also times where we've workshopped tweets with each other, essentially. Like,
oh, that was good.
Without saying it, but like, hey, what do you think of this?
Generally, when I want to tweet something that's going to make people mad, I will send that as a text first to gauge the temperature.
How mad will
of the
people
response.
Be? Yeah. And then I tell you, people are mad about everything.
Yeah.
People got mad because I called Justin Hall a depth defenseman.
Yeah,
like furious
about
that.
He isn't the definition.
I know.
Of a depth defenseman.
I got people being like, "Do you even watch Leafs games?" I was like, "No."
It is unbelievable. By the way, yesterday was a great example of how polarizing opinions can be when it comes to sports. Well, I guess life in general. But the Cassian Kachuk thing, I got ripped in my DMs that I am a Oilers fan, a Flames fan, that I hate the Oilers, that I hate the Flames, which to me signals I probably played it right down the middle pretty well. But
I don't think there is a middle with that. No. I want to get to Leaf stuff, but no, I think that honestly, this is actually a tipping point for a change in leadership with NHL player safety.
What are you talking
that
about?
That it's been a disgrace for a while now.
What was disgraceful about that?
What do you mean? The whole premise of the league is that you protect yourself, and fans like it when guys protect themselves. And guess what? If you're going to throw a dirty rat hit like to Chuck through twice, one where it was like pretty clear and obvious that he's headhunting on the first one, and the league doesn't even make him pick up a phone to be like, hey, to Chuck, like,
the hits were clean.
They were not clean. The first hit was not clean. They were legal.
Yeah, they weren't clean. They were legal.
I think the first hit was an absolute joke. And then Cassian, who is a tough guy defending himself and body bagging to Chuck, it was great for the league. It was great for everything. Like that. Who's not watching that game? Who's not watching the next Flames Oilers game, which I think is in three games, right?
I think the league recognizes they want that game to happen. I think they like the energy and animosity and all that. Here's the most underlooked, under-discussed aspect of the Zach Cassian Kachuk story. You can't just haul off and punch a guy who doesn't want to fight and repeatedly.
Yes, you can.
You cannot.
Yes, you can.
You cannot.
You should be able to
do that.
Do it. Beat his brains in.
So I'm with you.
Yeah.
I am with you, but within the confines of like the people who oversee the sport, you're not allowed to just keep punching guys who aren't fighting you.
Cool, then you're ruining the sport. I thought they got this Harvard guy who was like supposed to be a tough guy and also had a brain and was also going to be able to be like the perfect candidate for this job. And it's turned out that he's just been a complete failure. And he has no pulse of this league. He has no pulse
yesterday?
Of this fan base. You watch different suspensions throughout the year and you're like, it's like I was saying to Daniele before the show. Now NHL suspensions to me are essentially like what the NFL catch rule was a couple of years ago, where I'm like, is that a catch? Like, I don't know. What are we looking at here? It gets a catch to me. And then other people are like, no, it's not a catch. It's a disaster. It's a disaster. It's a disaster. It's a disaster. And yes, of course, make sure players are safe. And in a vacuum, if you're just grabbing someone where it's like, oh yeah, this guy stepped off the bench and it's Johnny Gaudreau and Zach Cassian pumped his head in, then yeah, you're like, you're suspended, man. But context should matter. It matters in real life and it should matter in sports. And if you do everything by the letter of the law, you end up with disasters. You end up
without context, that's a 15 game suspension. No. The context dialed it back to where it is.
15 game suspension.
You can't just beat the snot out of people.
Oh, and you want to be in the 3-on-3 league
with
that kind of attitude.
Oh man, I'll take it over.
Just passing for me.
Yes.
Just a league where we all just pass tape to tape.
Oh, that is the dream.
We pass tape to tape, and then we shake hands at the end of the game, and everyone tied, and it's great.
Yeah. Is there hitting in that? I don't even know.
I don't know. Probably not. Yeah. Is there hitting in the NHL anymore?
Oh. Yeah. Well, geez, 1970s in here.
Yeah, that's right. Some things were good the way that they used to be, all right? I'm not going to apologize for that. You know what else was good when it used to be a certain way? Was when the Leafs had, like, not an AHL team from like their bottom six now down.
Yeah.
You look at the Marlies right now. I'm like, how is the Marlies? That was a thought I had this morning. Like, what are the Marlies going to do? Who's on that team? Who's leading the Marlies?
Well, I'm looking at the 3-on-3 league as a stepping stone to get back
in. Exactly. Like if you're playing in the ECHL right now and you're looking at the Marlies, you're like, here's my shot.
You are licking
like,
your
chops. This is great. Their whole team is on the Leafs right now. And I actually want to get into some like other thoughts I had about that yesterday and just whether there are side effects that we haven't really completely thought about, but we got to start with the Sandin stuff, right? Mm. So the Leafs just recalled Timothy Liljegren, which I don't know if it's curious because they've done it before and it's obvious that they have like a reward system, right? Liljegren's been, I think, their biggest point producing defenseman on the Marlies this season. He's taken a step forward. He's done some positive things and yet it feels like he's going to be doing this in a reserve role because they already have three right shot defensemen who are ahead of him on the depth chart. And so he's going to sit in the press box. And while, you know, ideally you'd rather have the guy playing a game, you know, it's nice to have that guy in the press box. Maybe he is going to jump in the lineup for one of these games. But Rasmus Sandin gets called up. And my personal initial reaction was, without really thinking about the Riley injury, I just thought about it in a vacuum. And my initial thought was like, man, they can't burn their ELC just to take three games off Marincin's hands, especially after the organization just re-signed Marincin, because this is supposed to be the role, right? A stopgap defenseman who can go up and give you a few games in the NHL in a pinch. He's not an NHL regular. That's why he only makes $700,000. But this is supposed to be his role. Someone down the lineup who can give you a couple of games when you need it. And then it turns out it's actually like a doomsday scenario where all of a sudden you're looking at your two highest paid defensemen and they are not playing for the foreseeable future. Jake Muzzin, the reports are just kind of like back and forth on that. It feels like he could be back as soon as the All-Star breaks over, but then it could also extend into February. Like we're somewhere in the middle here. Morgan Riley, basically now I put on the calendar, you're circling a game against the Tampa Bay Lightning in March. That's kind of what you're looking at now and saying you're hoping March 10th, Riley returns, and then Boston's the following weekend, and you have him, and you can acclimate him to the lineup. How do you feel about where this organization's at in terms of using Rasmus Sandin as a 19-year-old and kind of the circumstances in which you're putting him in? Because if this isn't just like, hey, man, we're burning your ALC. It's also like, hey, man, we need you to play heavy minutes as a 19-year-old in a year where we're desperately trying to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I think you look at the start of the season, what the plan for Rasmus Sandin would have been. You know, he looked good in the six games he was with the Toronto Maple Leafs. He at least looked like he could hang. And I think part of the plan then was, all right, let's send him back and let's get him big minutes as the guy. Let's let him be the minutes eater for the Toronto Marlies and play our high leverage situations. Let's send him to the World Juniors and let him be the guy for, you know, in high pressure moments there. And then let's see where we're at. I really believe that would have been the developmental curve. And when I saw he got called up, I talked to some people in the organization there, and the general idea is kind of, you know, that I came away with was there's three games up to the bye week and the All-Star break. Mm-hmm. He's got six games. That takes him to nine. Let's see how he looks in these three games, and let's see if maybe we have a guy here. Because you're looking at making deadline deals coming up fairly soon. You're looking at a team that is on the precipice of, you know, being not just an average team, but a team that can do damage in playoffs. And this is before knowing about the Riley injury. I'm thinking all this. And so I was thinking it made some sense to see where Sandin's at. And one thing that gets lost in the whole don't burn a year of the entry level thing is, like, you want NHL players. If he's a good NHL player and he is cheap now and this year is just as important as any other year, you want him. That's just for me, it's, well, let's not overthink this. If he can play and help, let's get him playing and helping, especially because he's cheap.
I don't agree with that, because you can't convince me that a 19-year-old Rasmus Sandin for, you know, 30 games of an NHL season is more valuable than a 22-year-old Rasmus Sandin on 82.
He won't be. He won't
be. But that's what I'm saying.
Can I convince you that a 19-year-old Rasmus Sandin is considerably more valuable than the guy who would be playing instead of him this season for the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Not really.
Okay,
like,
well, I think
you can
that's,
in this
that's
role.
A difference.
This is, no, this is the role, yes, where it's a top four situation and it's an extended period of time where you're saying Morgan Riley is out for a long ass time and Jake Muzzin is actually, we don't want to have to force him to come back. He's way too important. We don't want Muzzin looking at, you know, our training staff and saying, I got to get back out there because we're starting to slip in the standings. Mm-hmm. So you got to bring up your best player. Yes, of course, win now is important for this team. I said off the beginning of the show that it turned out that both Brian Burke and Chris Johnson were right. CJ said that they weren't afraid to burn the ELC and that priority was winning this year. But Burke also said, man, they don't want to do it.
No.
Because, of course, yeah. It's way more valuable.
They would have loved to have been, to not needed to do this.
And the other part is, man, I talked to Rasmus Sandin myself on this show, and he mentioned that he trusted the way the organization had handled them, and he thought that they were kind of right with what they were doing and putting them down in the Marlies.
Right. They're not idiots, like, these guys.
Yeah.
They can see, you know, that there's some salary manipulation for a reason.
But that's what I'm saying. There's, like, this pervasive thought that I find that's among, and I'll say it, for younger people, like people of just kind of like my age and younger, I think there's this idea that experience has been overrated and that young people are overlooked and young people are underpaid and young people are taken advantage of because of their lack of experience. And they, like, apply it to the NHL guys. Mm-hmm. Like, they apply it to when they see Vlad Jr. and they apply it to when they see Bo Bichette and they apply it to when they see Rasmus Sandin and they say, to hell with that. Get this guy up here. Get him paid. Give him what's fair. This is supposed to be a meritocracy. Get this player up here. And it's like, yeah, but that's actually not how it works. There's a reason why you have your internship. There's a reason why some of these things happen. Not all things are equal in this regard. Like, Rasmus Sandin getting $1 million as a rookie is fine. Rasmus Sandin pushing his 1 year back before he gets a monster contract in the NHL, it's going to be fine. Yeah. Like, this is not some type of just massive cover-up or manipulation. This team is supposed to be fine. When they're healthy, they're actually, they have three left-shot defensemen that on paper should be, what, the three best left shot defensemen in the NHL, like, top to bottom? Like, who's supposed to be better than those three guys?
I mean, they're solid.
Yes, they're really, really solid. So this hasn't been some, you know, egregious crime to me. I actually look at this and say, if I'm the Leafs, I still am trying to get away with it. Like, I'm still trying to say that, is Rasmus Sandin supposed to be the tipping point between us beating the New Jersey Devils?
See, this is, though, your thinking here is what's gone wrong with
being a sports fan?
Yeah.
But why?
Exactly.
Why? Because you're smarter. You know too much.
No, because you're trying to get the most value out of every individual contract instead of...
Yes.
There's too many unknowables in the future to think we can plan for them.
You think Austin Matthews can be good in 3 years?
Well, there's some knowables.
You think Mitch Marner's going to be good in 3 years?
There are some knowables.
So
yes,
if you have those two guys who are still going to be in their prime.
Did you think the St. Louis Blues were going to win the Cup last year?
I mean, yes.
Up until what point did you believe the Cup...
The very first game of the season, I'm really smart. I looked at their roster. I said, you know what? If they call up Jordan Binnington,
they won the Cup was the second I believe that they could win the Cup. And in pro sports and in a parity-driven sport like the NHL, if you're in the fight, you have a chance. And I don't think that giving yourself a 11% chance 3 years from now should limit you from giving yourself, you know, an 8% chance this year when you're at 7. You should improve your chances every year as long as you're in that window and have a chance.
I'm just saying, how much better is your team right now? I'm happy to be wrong here. And you know what? Rasmus Sandin, when he played up in the NHL, looked awesome. Like, he really did. He looked well beyond his years. I think he's more than deserving to be here. In fact, is it outside the realm of possibility that he's better than Travis Dermott today?
No.
I don't think that it's that. No. It's not that big of a stretch.
If we can get to Dermott at some point,
we will.
I'm worried.
Yeah, so I'm just saying that I don't think that there's, like, a huge gap between those players. I think Rasmus Sandin is going to step up here, and people are going to be pointing the fingers at guys like me saying, ha-ha, I told you so. He's sick. I am not denying that. He's very good. I saw him in the World Junior Tournament basically put Sweden on his back and be like, this Russia team, the best team in the tournament, I'm almost going to beat them single-handedly like I'm Kawhi Leonard and this is a playoff game against the Sixers.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. I'm going to do that stuff. He's well beyond his years. And he's actually kind of like, I had machinations of, is this the guy that could fix Barry? Like, he does all the things that you're supposed to do. Like, he's got the gap control. He's a good defensive player. He's smart in his own zone.
Safer player.
He plays well-being, a calm game. Yeah. There's so much to like about Rasmus Sandin.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm sorry, this is just the way that I look at things. It's not in a vacuum. Is that if he plays six games for you now,
Now he's in.
No. Why is he in? Because once Jake Muzzin comes back, you're saying that, okay, now you're right. If he goes past it, then now Martin Marincin's down, right? And then he's playing all these games and you're right. But what happens when Morgan Riley comes back?
And you got Riley, Muzzin, and Dermott as your left
side. That's still a month of the season that you're now not using Rasmus Sandin. So you only use him for eight weeks.
Why are we not using him?
Well, where's he playing?
He's playing, whoever's playing the best is playing.
All right. So he's playing on his offhand?
Maybe he's playing instead of Dermott.
I mean, all right.
I mean, and you look at
what a disaster that would be. And Dermott and his agent are like, hey, we want the Josh Levo treatment now, like in the offseason immediately.
You look at NHL teams and how many defensemen deep they have to go to win a Stanley Cup. There is not an NHL team that goes into the playoffs and doesn't use eight guys. Mm-hmm. That's just the reality of it. You don't need six defensemen that can play. And Rasmus Sandin is... And I understand that he can play even if in playoffs,
yep.
if you want to keep him out till then. But I think this experience will give you a better sense of what he is, what he can do at this level. Is he a guy who's killing penalties on the power play? You know, I think this is a real chance for Sandy not to just get his feet wet, to be like, all right, mm-hmm. can you play?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you need. That's what you need out of him is to just strip ourselves of the blinders of his contract, his age. What can he do for us today?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's more than the other guys can do, well, I think that's what we got to do. Because quite frankly, now you've gone from, if you don't have Sandin in the fold for this whole time, what if you're not even a playoff team? Like, that's a very real consideration. Their odds, their playoff odds, according to Dom Lecision's model, dropped with the Riley injury from like 80%, 81% to 75%. Like, it's a pretty significant gap of your chances. You need to plug holes. He's a guy now.
So to me, this isn't black and white. I'm with you on a lot of those things.
Yeah, it's
like I don't have a staunch opinion that Rasmus Sandin shouldn't be here. I just think that people right now, in their excitement of wanting to see him up, are kind of ignoring how incredibly beneficial having a guy who he's playing in your top four, making less than $1 million when he's 22 or 23 years old, is going to be for you. Like if you think Rasmus Sandin is a future star, which a lot of people do think that. The value of getting someone who, you know, on the open market when he's hitting that season should be what? An $8-9 million player potentially?
By the way, to your point, look at what just happened with Marner. You go from you know, hundreds of thousands to tens of millions.
Yeah, you can't downplay that, especially considering that the general timeline when it comes to defensive development is that they get way, way better after they've been acclimated for a couple of seasons. And so it's just that's all to me, is that you absolutely have to consider what Rasmus Sandin is not only now, but what he is going to be in the future and how valuable that is to you. Like that's just the realities of the salary cap era. That being said, there's a ton of other ancillary benefits to bring him up now, right? You mentioned it. This team's not a lock to be in the playoffs. If they were in cruise control right now, I actually think they'd be like, all right, let's just call up Kevin Gravel and just do like a little thing here. Like he plays a couple of games, we get away with it and the All-Star break comes. And then we, dance around this a little bit. Second part is, there's been a really big conversation about how this blue line fits together this year and what they're going to look like moving forward and who are actually the core pieces. And there's a really uncomfortable but a real conversation I think that has to happen in terms of, is Morgan Riley a core piece? Like, is he someone that you just cannot move off of?
And so you're saying if you see over the next 2 months that things are just fine, you would consider...
If you have a 19-year-old Rasmus Sandin and he can play in your top four and Jake Muzzin comes back and he's Jake Muzzin of old... And you're looking at it and saying, what do we actually need on this team from our left side? Jake Muzzin, I don't think he's a better player than Morgan Riley, but he's a more complete player than Morgan Riley when he's healthy. And you could say that, again, because there are certain things that you can't measure, and that's like what teams have and what they don't have. And to me, Jake Muzzin is actually more of what you need for the next couple of years than what Morgan Riley is.
I think you were underselling the Riley value, though. Like, there's been years here where Riley's just been like, okay, that's a position taken care of that we don't have to even think about.
Yeah, here's the
Riley's
difference.
Riley's fine.
You're not getting anything back for Jake Muzzin. Jake Muzzin leaves and nothing returns. If you decided to move off of Morgan Riley, you're giving Jake Muzzin that extra cap space, but you're also able to cash in on something else from Morgan Riley. Like, that's a monster trade chip. To have him on that salary, that level of a player, even with a down season, you mentioned, is like, yeah, that locks up somebody in your top four, no doubt about it, who can give you power play one, who can break the puck out, who can skate like the wind, who has just a ton of awesome. I'm not saying trade Morgan Riley, just for the record here. I'm just saying that it does give you a time to evaluate what your roster is in a more complete sense and really get an idea of what Rasmus Sandin can do. Get him acclimated so that if you do decide that he is one of your best six guys, that he is playing in the playoffs and that he's not all of a sudden completely uncomfortable. And I would actually point to saying Travis Dermott was a little bit that guy, where Travis Dermott really didn't get a chance to get acclimated, and then he's in that Bruins series and he made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
Let Rasmus Sandin get a lot of those mistakes out of the way in the regular season, see if he fits in with the Bruins. I'm just saying that there's a lot of benefits to having him here too. It's a very, very expansive picture because we do live in a salary cap era.
Yeah. And I'm just thinking of the Sandin thing. I'm thinking of how valuable Cale Makar was for Colorado last year.
No doubt.
Wondering if after 30 games, if he can be, you know, not a contributor to that level, but if he can be someone who really does move the needle for this team. What this does do, and I think this is really important, in the past years on this show, we've talked about the lack of experimentation with the roster in the middle of the season. So come playoffs, you didn't know anything about your team outside of how it's supposed to look when every piece is together and the lines are as they normally are. This is going to be really good for teasing out who plays well with who, but also which defensemen can defend, who matter, you know, who can be, you know, keep a pair afloat and which guys are just kind of hanging on. I think this is going to be really good. I think this is going to be big minutes for guys that have needed it. If you look at the games played of the Leafs defense corps going forward here for the next, like, whatever, next three games, it's like Tyson Barrie with 500.
Most with the Leafs is now Dermott.
Yeah, it's
Dermott leads the Leafs in games played right now.
Outside of Barrie. Yeah. And then
No, I just mean like actual Toronto Maple Leafs games played.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Not that like that matters more than actual games.
No, played. But it's the, you know, Dermott is in the hundreds, Hall's at like 50 some, Sandin's at 6. Like, these guys are about to play minutes. So it's going to be interesting to see if that exposure helps them and teasing out who can really carry a pair.
I want to get deeper into that element of it. We got to take a break. It's Justin Bourne. It's JD Bunkus. It's the Leafs Hour presented by Drive Auto Group. There's more of it coming up in a couple of minutes. Hang tight. It's the Leafs Hour, presented by Drive Auto Group, fueled by customer expectations. I'm JD Bunkus. He's Justin Bourne. We're talking Sandin. We're talking Marlies. We're talking Leafs. And you and I just did the thing that seems to be the move everyone's doing when they're talking about Leafs right now, which is, well, it's great to bring up Sandin because then he's ready for the playoffs. But then you remember that, you know, standings exist and that there are other teams and that there is no guarantee that this group is going to make the playoffs and that Freddie Anderson is in a slump right now and that there has been a little bit of a lull.
Plug the hole.
Yes, exactly. No, their backup, who has now proven himself to be not the guy we saw for the larger sample of his career.
Right.
It's always my favorite when people, you know, who are Dubas disciples will pick and choose, like, what they want to do with certain players. Like, Dubas is on record with saying, like, don't use small sample size with goaltenders. It's really, really bad indicator. And then people will also be Dubas fans, and they'll watch two games of Michael Hutchinson, and they'll be like, aha,
fixed
he's
it.
Good.
Yeah,
he's good now. It's like, which side of this aisle are you on? But the Leafs are not assured to make the playoffs. And that's the other part that you actually have to, again, this is the job of the organization to do this. It's like you're balancing trying to make the playoffs, but also understanding what your roster is and blah, 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 and go down the line. And how that's a risk that you take here with Sandin is that you burn the ELC and it's a team that does not make the postseason. And I know that you just mentioned a chart and that the chart is still saying that the Leafs are going to make the playoffs. But do you feel right now, as of today, based on this group with that blue line and, you know, what they've got in behind them as well now, like if they do incur another injury to a certain player, that this is a team that is destined to still make the dance?
Do you play Jenga?
I have played Jenga.
Do you play Bar Jenga? Some bars of Jenga. Yeah. Anyway.
Jenga.
Yeah. So,
as though it's different.
Well, it's drunk version of it. Yeah, so it's a little more
have I ever had drinks and played Jenga? Yes.
Yes. Okay. So the Leafs to me, like when you put the Jenga blocks together, it's a perfect solid square and you start pulling out pieces and it gets a little bit more loosey-goosey. You play from the, you know, when you first start the game, if you take a piece from the top, it's fine. The base is still solid. The Leafs D are at the base of the Jenga Tower. Mm-hmm. And to me, Riley and Muzzin were like outside blocks of the row of three. Mm-hmm. You know, you can push that middle one out and it's okay. But those outside ones, things get a little dicey when you pull the outside blocks out. The Leafs are fine. They're mm-hmm. fine. The tower is still standing. I still like the solid build up top. I still think there's a lot of pieces there. But boy, not having Muzzin and Riley really changes how I look at the tower, because it feels like a couple of bad breaks. Maybe Freddie gets hurt for a couple of weeks.
A couple. I mean, one, that's the premise, is you take out the outside blocks, that means the next pull is basically...
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going with
the
this.
The tower is tumbling.
Like, it feels like they've run out of stabilizing pieces, and any other little whoopsies here can take this from, certainly I think they're a playoff team, to uh-oh. The, you know, and I'll let you make your point about Sandin there.
Well, that's just it, is that if you do miss... You lose that, and you burn the ELC. You're kind of looking at this year like, wow, not how damaging has this been? Not only do so now they wouldn't have a first round pick.
Yeah.
Whew, that's tough to swallow going to the draft.
No first, burnt the ELC, no playoffs.
Exactly.
And now going to UFA is Muzzin, Barry. Yeah.
And you're on the last year of Freddie Anderson.
Ah!
Yeah. All of a sudden, yeah, it's going to get
real. I was
hometown
runner, by the way.
A lot of... bums are going to be clenched.
Yeah.
Let's just say.
So then what's the other side of that? How does it go perfectly?
Well, I think how it goes perfectly is that Rasmus Sandin is who a lot of people think he is, which is this kid that's like well beyond his years when it comes to poise. Because that's what you really want. That's, to me, the actual biggest worry here is not like, I think Rasmus Sandin is going to be fine. I think that this team is just still talented enough that they'll find a way to make the playoffs. I think Anderson gets right, and then we're still going to get a month of Freddie Anderson red hot, where he's just going to steal a buttload of games, mm-hmm. and it won't really matter. Like, that's the way it's going to go. And they're going to get, I would assume that Muzzin still comes back. You know, they only miss him for 5 to 6 to 7 more games, right? And can you survive 7 games without Muzzin? Yeah, probably. If Muzzin and Riley were on the same track, I'd think, you know, they're going to miss. That
wow.
It's just...
But that's how tight it's gotten in your mind. That it's,
yeah, because I just... This is kind of where I wanted to go with this is I like seeing these guys get opportunities, right? Who doesn't? It's been super fun talking about Pierre Engvall and seeing different guys get opportunities and come up and actually thrive under them. And we saw it with the more high-talented guys, whether it was Marner and Matthews and Nylander. But something that's a little lost in this is that Austin Matthews is 22 years old, mm-hmm. and that so is Mitch Marner, and that essentially their core is super, super young guys that while they do have some experience in the playoffs, that it's not the most experienced group of veteran leaders who are going to know exactly to lead by example and then know the right thing to say in the room. Like, that's not really who these guys are yet. And you know what? Maybe this propels that forward a little bit. Maybe it does also ask for a leadership component from some of those players. Maybe there's more onus on them to be consistent and bring something night in, night out. But the kind of the downside, or I won't even say it's a downside because it hasn't been proven out yet, but the potential downside of having basically a roster full of Marlies in your bottom six and now in all your depth positions is like, who are you leaning on? Like, you have a first-year head coach who has no experience in the NHL. You have now blue liners where it's like Tyson Barry is your leader out there.
Can I tell you what I think they think?
Okay.
I think that they believe that all of the things that you're alluding to that – about leadership and experience, and I think they don't believe in it. I think they believe that if you have the most talented hockey players, it's a hockey game, and if you score more goals, you're going to get the win and you'll move on. I think that the essence of what Keith and Dubas are doing is they are challenging the core traditional beliefs of how it has to be done, and I think at the end of the day, they just think hockey wins.
So
they think that it can be Rasmus Sandin and Travis Dermott. It doesn't have to be grizzled veteran, you know, Bob Tumstrom from Flin Flon.
But that's kind of the thing where I'm like, that turns me off the discussion, because I'm actually more in their camp of, yeah, just bring the best players up. Like, this was the whole thing with Team Canada
sure,
Hockey.
But that's it with Keith. He doesn't need to be Joel Quenneville or Scotty Bowman. Can he coach?
Yeah.
No, what's the difference?
That is not the bigger concern to me. The bigger concern is that it's like, can you do it in these massive extremes? Where it's legitimately right now in the lineup, Tavares.
Yeah.
Like, that's the guy.
Yeah, and I think that's what they're saying. They believe you can.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to say you can't, but I'm going to say that, man, it sure is a experience has gone this way where it was so overrated for a really long time that, again, it goes back to the same thing of people of, you know, our vintage, which is that, you know, experience was something that was a roadblock for you for a really long time. And so you see it as a frustrating element, right? Where you're like,
there's also so many years where guys would get contracts based on what they'd done. Yes. And everyone's like, that guy's used up.
And guess what? That was always in the conversation, right? Like, I remember the Backus year, for example. It was Backus, and who did the Islanders sign? The Islanders signed somebody big for a bunch of money where it was like both these contracts were so just awful right out of the gate where you're like,
was it Andrew Ladd?
Yes, it was. Year? It was Ladd and it was Backus. And it was the same year. And that was kind of the year, the first time I remember everyone basically being on the same page.
That UFA crop was just disastrous.
Yes, it was. But that's what I'm saying. It was a bad UFA year and teams had money and they decided to go pay for experience and said, yeah, screw it. These guys have played before and they're leaders and blah, blah, blah. And they stunk and they stunk and they were bad, bad, bad contracts. And so, yeah, there's extremes on both sides. There's no doubt about it. And the scale has always tilted one way, which is pay for the experience and tie goes to the veteran and all these like old cliches that have been kind of archaic for a long time. But also, I don't believe that it's nothing because I have the same thoughts in my own life. And I know that sports isn't a real job necessarily, right? Like it's not a traditional thing, but neither is what we do, right? What we do is a non-traditional job. But you know what's super helpful? When I get to talk to people who have been radio hosts before me, who have done this job before, this was not an easy thing to just jump right into. And did I think that, you know, am I good enough to do this? And you have your doubts and blah, 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 blah. But what's always been great is having stabilizing forces around you who also have talent and have been there before and who can console you and who can watch film with you and who are your peers with you and who can give you a note. And you know this, and we've talked about this before. It sucks getting a note from somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about.
Yes.
Someone who gives you, that's why Twitter is just such a, like,
not everyone should have a voice.
Yes. It's just, there's so many voices out there where you're like, yeah, great. Thanks. Unnamed account with, you know, somehow you just tweet all positive things about the Leafs or whatever it is that you do. I don't really care what you have to say. And all it is frustrating me. And I wonder that with a group like that, if things start to go awry and, you know, things aren't going very well, how it's going to operate for someone like John Tavares. Who they're like, hey, you know, he's got to be the only one who speaks up in the room. He's got to be doing everything. How is he going to be, you know, delegating to every single one of these guys? That there's no guy on the blue line all of a sudden that can just step in and say to Rasmus Sandin when they're watching film, like, all right, see what you did here? And I know your coach is supposed to be doing that. And I know he's going to be absorb it like a sponge. But some of that matters. Like, you can't tell me that that's a 0% positive.
Where it's gone wrong in terms of getting players, like, on UFA markets is that experience is extremely valuable, but it's tough to quantify how much and you shouldn't pay for it.
Yes.
So the Toronto Marlies, when I was there, we were down 2-1 in the series to Albany and had kind of a round table, everyone, you know, the whole team sit around a dressing room and, you know, what are you seeing? What do you think? Kind of get everyone's opinion. And everyone kind of spoke, and it was like, all right, not sure what we got done here. And then Ben Smith, who won a Stanley Cup with the Chicago Blackhawks, was like, hey, just one more thing. And just, like, kind of had, like, a minute or two about, like, you know, calm the F down. Like, he didn't say that, but it was like, you know, these series, you
fall. Right, he actually said the swear. But anyway.
Right. But, like, there's no team that's won the Stanley Cup in I don't know how many years that hasn't been behind in a playoff series at some point. Mm-hmm. Like, that. This just the ebbs and flows and the ups and downs. And it was really nice to be like, oh, yeah, like, it's 2-1. They have won one more hockey game than us, and it's not a major crisis. And I think there is a calming element. And again, so I'm just saying that I do value that leadership. It's tough to quantify how much is necessary. And there's part of me that thinks that with the young guys being in their fourth playoff year for the big guys, really, if now they won't see the opportunity to make it their own team, instead of just looking to follow Patrick Marleau and to follow the older guys and to, you know, this is them now. It's they're the guys driving the ship. If that doesn't have some value on its own, again, I don't know what it's worth, but it's not worth nothing.
And I'm with you. And it's so funny because I've been someone who for a long time has been really, really critical of the Patrick Marleau signing because I think they did exactly that, where they overstated what he was going to bring when it comes to intangibles. And people have been like
a quiet guy.
Well, you know, he's going to show the guys how to work out and he's going to show them how to be a pro. And it's like, I don't really think you need to pay $6.5 million for that.
You can get a strength and conditioning guy for 150 grand.
I don't think that you need to, lose a first round pick for that. So, yeah, there's a line here. I don't have all the answers. I do believe that it's something to monitor, and I'd be very curious. Like, this is always where those embedded shows and, you know, actually knowing what's going on in the room and being a part of it. But I would love to know, like, truthfully from a guy like John Tavares when this season is over, like, hey, How much pressure did this put on you, this stretch of just no veterans around you? Did it tax you off the ice at all? Were you able to sleep the same way? Were you able to go through your routine the same way? Mm-hmm. Were you answering more text messages? Did you feel like you needed to be more vocal in the film room? How did that extend to your play? I don't think that these things just happen. And it's like a video game where you just slot in the next guy and he's rated Rasmus Sandin 82 and everything's fine.
I also think that you put young talent in a position to succeed when they're surrounded by guys like that. Like I think of David Pastrnak in Boston. Like if he's playing with Willie Nylander and Nick Ehlers on a line, does he have 36 goals and on his way to the Rocket? Those are two great players I just named. Is he still doing it? I don't know. I don't know if, I think that those Marchand and Bergeron doing the work and being in the right positions and, the play going the right way, I think that helps them out a lot.
Having the credibility to go to him when they have a criticism.
Right.
Like, again, what's going to happen?
The value of that.
What's going to happen when someone is doing something wrong? And who's going to be the person that points it out? And how is that going to be received? And how is that going to operate in that room? I just think that they're
almost learning on their own here, though. I think there's some... You can only
it's a cool
hold their
experiment,
hand.
Right?
You can only hold their hand for so long.
For
right?
sure.
You raise the kid
for
till
so
he's...
long. Rasmus said he's 19 years old.
Well, Rasmus, you can hold his
Travis Dermott's 23. They're like, come on, kid, you're top pairing D.
Yeah, but at some point, Austin Matthews and Marner and Willie are the kid who goes off to college and he's still living at home after his 4 years, and the parents are like, all right, it's time to go.
It's just there's this weird thing with Austin Matthews where we're like, he's 22. He's this. He's, with him, there's more fluctuation between, what to
He's
expect.
He's just a kid. He's a four-year guy. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's tough to do that with him. We got to take one more break, and after that, we'll reflect on what we learned today.
All we need is candlelight, you and me, and a bottle of wine.
I bought this CD when I was like in grade 7 or 8, because I loved this song. I remember Much Music Countdown, this song came on, just banger, banger, banger. And I remember going to a CD shop, hook me up with that Eagle Eye Cherry Sun, and the rest of the album, I don't think there was another hit on it. Sorry, Eagle Eye. But this song is a forever song, though, so...
It does sort of feel like not the demise, but the downfall of the CD, the album purchasing world was like that exact example. You're like, that's so good. Surely they did something half as good. Oh.
All the money I ever made before this job, and still this job because I'm still paying off my student debts, went to... student loans, CDs, and DVDs. Like, those were my purchases.
Good investments. Did you buy a boat, too?
Yeah. I probably would have. I was really dumb. I still am. Just so you know, Toronto Boat Show, you're going to have a chance to win your way to the Toronto International Boat Show. We have your chance to win one of 10 4-packs, plus the grand prize. The grand prize includes a dinner for two at the Keg, Delicious Keg, a $100 shopping spree at the show, plus a one-night stay at a hotel. Enter at sportsnet.ca/590. So, Justin Bourne, the last segment of our shows after non-game days is called Reflections. I think I'm just going to jump into one that is top of mind for both of us, which is this. As much as this is a Rasmus Sandin story, because he's the exciting new piece and that everyone wants to see, the real name that the Leafs, I think, are going to monitor the most closely and who's going to be under the most scrutiny here and who's going to need to elevate their game and really show out is Travis Dermott.
Yes. I think that is a good reflection and a worthwhile one. I think that Sheldon Keefe said as much even before this injury just a few days ago, and I think that it's kind of like, okay, kid, you're not hurt. You're not fresh face. Mm-hmm. It's kind of time here. I think my reflection from all this conversation we've been having here is just how crucial making the playoffs is this season, because if everything we've done here is in a lost cause, is it a bad year? There's still a playoffs changes a look back at the season, the development of all these kids. So now my thoughts about what should happen at deadline day are a little bit different, and that doesn't mean selling for the future per se, but I just suddenly feel like you need to make playoffs this season.
Well, if they somehow just go into it. It would need to be a tailspin, right? Like, they'd need to be completely out of it. It wouldn't be, they'd have to do like the Montreal thing where you lose eight games in a row.
I guess when I think of making playoffs, I don't mean like limping into the wild card spot.
No, but they'll have to gladly take that if they do it. And right. then their justification would be, well, we still have Freddie Anderson. He could get hot. Our blue line's getting healthy and we still have, you know, this top tier scoring talent. And
there is
things
this,
didn't break our way.
This whole thing that's going to come together in a conversation that I guarantee we have in a couple months where it's mm-hmm. like, hey, Dermott's back. Muzzin's back. Ilya Mikheyev is back. We haven't seen this team. This team has played to date zero games together healthy.
Yeah, it's
weird. We haven't seen them with Janssen, with Trevor Moore, with Mikheyev, mm-hmm. with Dermott, with Riley, with Hyman, with Marner. Everyone, Tavares, they've had injuries all season.
So, it's part of the tragedy of this year.
So, but this is going to be our fantasy when we get there mm-hmm. that we're going to willingly delude ourselves and others into is, what if? What if this fully assembled machine is an unstoppable force of nature?
To be fair, I think that some of the pieces that we've talked about here have not been as critical as others. Like, I don't think that missing games from Zach Hyman at the beginning of the year was like, oh my God.
Zach Hyman is the best hockey player on planet Earth.
He's really good. I shouldn't have even picked him out because I think he's become more valuable than even Andreas Janssen has, which is something I never thought I would have been saying even a year ago, but... chalk it up in the old L column for me. But yeah, I'm just saying that, yeah, there's been some of these injuries where I'm like, all right, yeah, like yeah, they're not complete, but I think we have a pretty good idea of who they are. Like, I'm not...
It is pretty hilarious to be like, well, they haven't had Trevor Moore at times this year.
That's what I'm saying here. Yeah. It's like, there's some that have been pushed a little too far. But yeah, the Dermott thing to me is like, so many people have wanted, and myself included at times, to see him in a top pairing role, right? And I know it's not, again, an ideal circumstance because he's not going to be playing with Morgan Riley, which is what a lot of people wanted. And it doesn't appear like he's going to be playing with Tyson Barrie either. But here's this responsibility for him. And he's someone who, something you said to me over a year ago has stuck when I think about Travis Dermott, which is like, when? When is it going to be that time where you take that step from, mm-hmm. hey, here's all the things you could do to the things that you can do? And this is a real opportunity for him to show those things. And I'm very excited for it. I think that, you know, he is basically hand in hand with Sandin in terms of like what he's going to be with a higher role, with a bigger role. But yeah, for someone who probably saw Justin Hall get $2.6 million,
yeah,
he's got to be thinking, well, I'm better than him. I want more than him.
But are you right now?
That's it.
So
like, can you be better?
What I think needs to happen with Travis Dermott is all of us have, including the Maple Leafs, have seen the talent in terms of his skating ability, his evasiveness, his shot, his brain. He can play. We know that. But there is an element of like how Nazem Kadri went from. A great player to suddenly being able to be a defensive center who could shut down Connor mm-hmm. McDavid and suddenly change his role to like a guy who's good both ways. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, Dermott, we know you can do all the fun stuff, but we're going to need you to be able to be a lockdown guy. We need to see that you can defend, that you can kill penalties.
He's going to play 20 minutes.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be good for him. Yeah. I think it'll, in terms of staying in the game and routine, and he is a ball of energy. He is not a guy who's going to go out there and be dragging. You know, he's a guy who can handle big minutes, I think. So,
if Sandin and Dermott work out, it's going to have an impact on the blue line next year because it's either going to be Jake Muzzin's gone or Morgan Riley's gone. Like, I just don't see the room for all four of those guys. Like, someone eventually is going to have to move off, even if you think that one of them's supposed to be playing the right side and that Keefe will be more open to doing that than Babcock was or any of those things. It just, to me, it doesn't feel like allocation of assets and resources that you're going to be paying Riley, Muzzin, and Dermott, right? But like also, one of those three guys is gone, and this is Dermott's chance.
And also, do you believe that, you know, this D group as currently constructed is good enough? Like, that's fair. I think that's totally fair. When I look at the Leafs, it's like when they have these bad nights where they look porous like they did against Florida, it's like, I was drawing up the D pairs and potentially having Dermott with Barrie, and it's just like, God, that group is going to give up so many against.
There's no way to make the pieces fit side by side and have it look like you're like
they
like got
that
it.
One. I like that one. Yeah. By the way, we've heard they're going with Marincin with Barrie, which to me is like an absolute like elastic band to the goalpost for Tyson Barrie. They're saying we are keeping. We do not trust you to play with another offensive player. I know they tried with Riley, but I don't think anyone else can jump in there.
This is a good hour, man. Thanks for jumping in today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to delve into a pretty big scandal. May have heard of it. The team called the Astros with John Morosi. That's next on Good Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.